Today on Smash Cuts, it's a civil war, and we need to discuss all the details of the most divisive film out today. We'll dive in right after this. Welcome to episode 178 of Smash Cuts. I am Joe, guy at the movies, and we today are joined by Jimmy from Movie Death Blows. Jimmy, how are you?
Good. How are you, Joe? Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Long time no see.
I know, right? It's only been 4 days.
4 days. I don't even remember what the last... Oh, Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. I'm like, what was the last movie?
Yes, that one.
You didn't make it down for any of the Springfest stuff, did you?
No. Having a three-year-old kind of hinders my ability to do things at all times.
People and your kids.
Yeah, well, my wife only gives me like a certain leeway of days I'm allowed to be at the movies or anything.
All right, so before we get started and dive into talking Civil War and a bunch of other stuff, I have to ask you, what is the background or the genesis of Movie Death Blows? Where did that come from?
I was trying to figure out like a niche, like something other people weren't doing. So like when I first started doing it, it was just like movie death scenes from like horror movies and stuff like that, like famous death scenes. And then people started following it. So then I kind of evolved it into what it is now. Like, it was never supposed to be this. It was just supposed to be like having fun. But then like Death Blow itself is from Seinfeld. It's the episode when Jerry and Kramer and the guy Brody or whatever, when Jerry's a bootlegger, he go get him Death Blow. That's the only thing I could come up with at the time. I was like, all right, we'll just go with that. So then it's caught on for the last 10 years,
and it's become what it's become, right?
Yeah. I had much more hair when it first started out.
I don't believe it.
No, it's true. You can see.
Is that because of all the movies that you've seen that you don't like, or is it because of having a three-year-old?
No, the hair was gone before the three-year-old. It's probably just from my work at that time.
There you go. All right, why don't we dive right in? We need to talk about Civil War, a movie that we saw together earlier. Was it even this past Monday, right?
Yeah, we saw it Monday. Yeah.
Like, Jesus, all the, you know, so many movies the past couple weeks, but... I was sweating during this entire movie, so I apologize if you heard me like crinkling around on the chair or whatnot. But, you know, this has become a very divisive film. A lot of people feeling as though it shouldn't be released given the general political climate and, you know, everything that's going on in the world right now. But Alex Garland really delivered quite the intense film here. What are your thoughts on it?
Well, it's always hot in the Chamonix Theater, so it might not have been you. It's always at 1,000.
It's true, too.
But, I mean, I enjoyed Civil War for what it was. I wanted more of, like, the actual background of the Civil War and, like, a story about what was actually going on. But it was like, hey, there's a Civil War going on in America. We don't know why, but we're just going to roll with it here, and the president's evil. They never explained the factions or the sides, but I thought the movie was awesome in general. Like, if you can nitpick and ignore everything I just said, then it's a totally enjoyable movie. It's intense. Kirsten Dunst is at her best. Wagner Moura, when he's not playing a Colombian drug dealer, is much thinner, incredible at that point. And I forget what the girl's name, the one that was from Priscilla, but she was
Kaylee
like the
Spaney.
Kaylee Spaney. She was the heart and soul of the whole thing. She carried it. I didn't expect her to be as good as she was, but she was incredible.
Yeah, Kaylee Spaney was incredible. I didn't really like her in Priscilla, to be honest. I didn't love that movie as it is, but she's really good in Civil War. Definitely a focus on photojournalists and sort of what they'll do to get the story. And you learn a lot there. It's a really, I think, unique angle to explore Civil War. It's funny because a lot of people are talking about wanting more background. And in a perfect world, yeah, I would want to know, like, what led to this? What, you know, what happened? I like that we essentially have four different factions here, and we don't really know who the good guys are, who the bad guys are, what's going on. There's a couple lines that kind of lead to some idea of, you know, what the president has done in the past. There's a line where they're talking about what they would ask him in an interview, and they're saying things like, you know, did it make sense to disband the FBI or launch strikes on your own people, things like that. So you get a little bit of like, oh, okay, like a little twinge of it. But the fact that that wasn't in there, I think, allowed me to just enjoy the movie for what it was that much more.
I think the main thing with me was like the whole thing was like, we're going to get to Washington, D.C. to interview the president. And then like they get there and like the catharsis of the movie happens and they don't really ask any questions, and it's just kind of like, okay, we're all mad now because this happened. That's the end. Like, one thing I didn't mention, it Jesse Plemons is only in it for like 5 minutes, but that 5 minute scene, like, if you could give someone an Oscar nomination for 5 minutes and one scene and one scene only, he would definitely get one, because like, I was scared at that point. I mean, not really, but like, if I was in there, the red glasses, I think, did it for me, is what it was.
Did you hear the story that he apparently was a last minute addition because the person that was supposed to play that dropped out?
I did. Do we know who the person? I had not heard that. Do you know who the person was?
I don't. I was reading something last night, and I don't know that they named the individual, but Kirsten Dunst was like, "You want me to get Jesse?"
It's like, he's not doing anything.
But yeah, you're right. That scene, that's a good 10 minute scene, and that was really on the edge of your seat with that one.
But again, if you don't ask any questions about the scene, it's fine. But like, why is like? It's just there, and it's like, we don't know what side this person's on. Like, that's the whole point of the movie. Like, nobody's on anybody else's side. It's just about, like, you know, people are shooting at us and we need to kill them. Because there's that one scene with the snipers before that, yep, where they're like, he's like, does it matter? Like, they're shooting at us, we're shooting back at them.
Which pretty much defines the movie. And I think ultimately it's just a movie that highlights the horrors of warfare, and especially modern warfare, and how terrifying it can be. You know, the U.S. is usually, we kind of are in our own little bubble when it comes to this, but there's so many areas of the world that have been dealing with infighting like this for quite a long time. You know, a lot of people asking the question, as I mentioned earlier, should we be showing this on screen? Should this be something that, you know, we should even put out into the ethos? But I think the fact that it doesn't take sides, and it really does just more so show warfare in general, it makes it a little bit more of a responsible movie.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I said in my review. I was like, look, I mean, war is brutal at that point. Like, it's, you know, we have all these rules about war crimes and what you can and can't do. But when you're on the ground in the heart of it, that stuff doesn't matter for the people that are actually participating in it. And like you were saying, like, we're in a bubble over here. There's a great line from Street Fighter that Raul Julia's character has. He's just like, you know, for you, the most important day is when, you know, I came to your village. And for me, it was a Tuesday. It didn't really matter to me. It's just a everyday occurrence to me. So.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely wild to see. I think, was it you that was saying it afterwards that like, you don't always see your own people like blowing up stuff in DC, but it's usually you see aliens and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, you think it like, you know, when your monuments get blown up, it's, you know, tidal waves or disasters or Independence Day. And you're not used to Americans taking out the Washington Monument and the White House and the Lincoln Memorial and stuff like that. That's not something you're used. It's always an invading army. Olympus has fallen, but not from yourself, from terrorists or something like that.
Yeah. Absolutely. Kirsten Dunst, you mentioned it earlier on. She's someone that has just been having some wild performances in some of the movies that she's been in lately. Thinking back to The Power of a Dog a few years ago, which I didn't really care for, but she was great.
Yeah.
I did not like that movie at all.
I didn't care for either. And I never saw The Beguiled or anything like that. But like, she's had like kind of a renaissance with this movie. I think this is kind of really, I don't know, skyrocketed into the stratosphere, but you know, she's older now, but like, she's definitely going to get roles off this. And we all want to see her come back as Mary Jane in Spider-Man, even if she doesn't at that point.
And I think we all want to see her continuing to be on the interview circuit, because some of the things that she's saying are wild.
Yeah. Like you have two different spectrums. You had like Dakota Johnson on the Madam Web, where she just didn't care at all and was just like talking about nonsense. And then Kirsten Dunst, who's just phenomenal at it.
What was her, when they asked her if she would return to a Marvel movie or to a superhero movie, she said, I have kids to feed. And they pay well.
I'm married. I'm older now. I need the money.
Yeah, she's great. I ultimately agree with you in terms of the entire cast just being phenomenal here, I think. I'm going to forget his name, but the older journalist who's in absolutely everything.
Stephen McKinley Henderson.
Yes, he was even wonderful in the role that he had within this.
And then I think they were interviewing Alex Garland. They were asking him about it, and he's like, "They cut him out of fucking Dune. That's ridiculous."
Saw that.
I was like, "Yeah, definitely." I was like, "He's like, how do you leave him on the cutting room floor?"
Where does this sit for you in terms of Alex Garland films?
I'm up and down with what Alex makes. So like when Annihilation came out, like I was super pumped to see that. And then I was super disappointed when I saw the finished product. I guess I was just expecting something else, but like Ex Machina is great. Men, I didn't care for. And it's just like, I think I like him more as a writer than I do as a director, but I thought this was his strongest directing outside of Ex Machina at that point.
He has a really unique way of making moviegoers uncomfortable in all of his films. And I think Men definitely did that in a number of ways. And then especially at the end where it was just like, what the hell is happening? And I think that's really, you know, that's unique. That's something that I don't necessarily love in the moment, but thinking back to it, I'm like, wow, like, what an experience that hour and 45, hour 50 minutes was.
I think he just thrives better in the sci-fi kind of horror genre, like, as, like, as a writer, when you're thinking about 28 Days Later and Dread and even Sunshine, which is probably the most underrated sci-fi movie of the last 25 years.
Like Chris that. Evans, right?
It's Chris Evans. It's Academy Award winner Cillian Murphy. It's Michelle Yeoh, who won an Academy Award. It's like half the Marvel universe. Like Benedict Wong is in it. The guy from Shogun, whose name I can't pronounce, is in it. Rose Byrne is in it. Everybody's in it.
Wow. Yeah, I forgot about that movie.
And I'm leaving out so many other people. Like, what's Mark Strong is in it. Cliff Curtis is in it. It's a stat cast that nobody talks about enough, but Danny Boyle and Alice Garland did a tremendous job with it.
Yeah, this is wild. I'm looking at the list right now.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Oh, Haruyuki Sanada.
Yeah, yeah. It's literally like everybody in that movie has been in the MCU at some point, I think, except for Cillian Murphy. Or like in a Marvel movie.
That's so funny. Wow. What a cast. That movie, I remember seeing it and not really loving it in the moment, but it's one I would want to revisit, I think.
I was working at Blockbuster when it came out. That's the only reason, because like it didn't have a big theatrical release. The only reason I knew about it is because we had it there and I had rented it. I was like, this is all like, me and my brother are big fans of Event Horizon and like the space horror genre. So like when you see something like that, and like it's not supposed to be a horror movie, but like the second act is just like, well, who's this other person on the ship and where did they come from? So
wild. All right, why don't we switch gears here? We're going to dive into talking a little bit of Marvel. We got some Marvel news this week, or at least some further insight into some of the projects that are coming up. But we also heard from Robert Downey Jr. as he's doing the interviews for his new show, The Sympathizer, where he said that he would happily return as Tony Stark or / Iron Man, that it's too integral to his DNA, and we should never bet against Kevin Feige. As a general question, the Avengers, whom stories we've wrapped up, do you want to see them back in some fashion, or are you done with them?
I mean, I'm always there for Tony Stark's Iron Man. He's the first one. Like, again, this is another movie that came out when I was working at Blockbuster. The movie we played the most at Blockbuster were The Dark Knight and Iron Man that same summer when they came out. So, like, Robert as Tony was a revelation to me because of his past and what he'd been going through. And like everybody thought he was down and out, and he came back and he just blew your mind with this performance. So his solo movies since the first one have not been, you know, great. Like Iron Man 2 or 3, I'm not huge fans of, but the first one, if they could ever recapture that and do something different with it, I think it would be fantastic.
Yeah. He said that role chose me, which I think is pretty cool.
I can't think of anybody else ever playing it. I just can't compute in my mind. Like he is Tony Stark.
The article in the Hollywood Reporter is theorizing like how they could have him return if he was going to, but cautioning that anything post Endgame would be cheapening the Endgame story and the stakes of Endgame, but looking at whether or not they would do a prequel, like another Iron Man prequel type story, and de-age him a little bit.
I mean, I think you could do that, or you could do, I mean, the multiverse saga, whatever it is, you can go into a different universe. You have a superior Iron Man story you could tell where Tony Stark is kind of like an evil version of Iron Man, or, you know, or he could come back as a life model decoy, an LMD from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. He could be, you know, a robot that they brought back at that point.
Well, you're getting all nerdy right away.
I try to keep it to a minimum. He does make an LMD reference in one of the movies. I forget which one it is. Like, this is a life model decoy of Tony Stark, but like, yeah.
So before we dive into a lot of other stuff, though, since we are getting nerdy, so I was talking to a friend last night and he was theorizing kind of where we're going with Marvel. And it got me excited for the first time in a while because I actually buy into it. And I wonder your thoughts on this. And I'm going to butcher some of it and you'll know more here, given that you're wearing an X-Men shirt right now, X-Men for those that are listening. X-Men 97. So he was talking about how the future of Marvel, what we're going to see in the next year or so is incursions, that we have the X-Men universe that's being set up, whether that's the X-Men universe that we saw at the end of the Marvels or the X-Men 97 universe, which seems to be playing into the overall Marvel Cinematic Universe with the what people believe was the Watcher this past week and all that stuff. So you have those two happening. Then you have the Fantastic Four story coming, which is set in another universe.
Different universe.
So at some point they're going to come over. And that's likely, I mean, it's going to be essentially a prequel story, if you will, like an older story. I'm wondering if we're going to learn more about the incursions in Deadpool and Wolverine, and that's kind of going to be the main thing, and ultimately probably get a reference to the Fantastic Four, which will then set up that movie. What are your thoughts on all that? Is that how they're going to kind of pull this together?
I think Deadpool, Wolverine is going to be more of what we all thought Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness was going to be. Like, instead of seeing just like one random universe, we're going to see the X-Men universe. We might see the old Fantastic Four cast from the early 2000s in that Fox universe and stuff like that. But I really think Deadpool Wolverine's going to reset everything going forward for what we're going to see. And like you said, Fantastic Four is supposed to take place, I think, in like the 70s in an alternate universe. We're probably going to see Galactus. We're going to see Julia Gardner as the female version of the Silver Surfer. So like, my theory is basically Galactus eats that Fantastic Four universe and they make an incursion over into our, you know, Earth 616, whatever the Earth they're talking about is.
You know exactly what it is. It's 616.
Yes, Earth 616. Sorry, I have to make it seem like I'm not a total dweeb when it comes to this stuff. But like, I mean, from what we've all been talking about Deadpool Wolverine, everybody's got theories about what it's going to be, who's going to show up in it. There's going to be an alternate version of Deadpool, you know, and stuff like that. There's going to be a Deadpool dog. So it's all going to be absolutely insane when we see Hugh and Ryan put this thing together.
Yeah, I'm really fascinated to see kind of where they go with it. And I was thinking in terms of X-Men 97. X-Men 97 ends before Deadpool. But they're also doing another series or another season of X-Men 97, aren't they?
They already renewed it for season two.
So I'm wondering how that's all going to factor in. But it's just, it got me excited for the first time in a while because now you're starting to see pieces come together that makes sense, and it's not just random theorizing, you know, like when is Mephisto coming? But
everything post Endgame has been so confusing outside of No Way Home, just because it's like we still have no payoffs from Shang-Chi from that post credit scene. It's like it's Bruce Banner and it's Captain Marvel. And it's like, oh, what's making this noise, drawing the rings towards us? That was like 4 years ago. I still have no idea what it is. No one's told me anything. And like, they've never done that much of a buildup, so I kind of think they were kind of confused about what they were going to do at a certain point, and then, you know, everyone not liking the Marvels, but I did. So it was like, you know, we can't do this anymore. So it was like, it's been confusing with what their plan has been. It's been incoherent, to say the least, in my
opinion. Did you like Eternals?
I liked it, but like, I liked it the second and third time I saw it better than when I saw it the first time, because I don't know what I was expecting to walk into. But like, Richard Madden is Icarus. I think we all know he's going to return at some point.
Oh, absolutely.
Going to kill him. And, you know, you still have the Kit Harington payoff, that he's going to be Black Knight. And like, again, that's another post-credit scene with no payoff because Blade is a disaster. Nobody knows, like, Mahershala Ali's voice is in it at the end, but what is he doing? We have no idea because, we haven't seen him. It's been 3 years now.
And no one knew that it was Mahershala Ali's voice until they went and researched it after.
Yeah. Like, wait, like, I came home and I saw, and I read as a post-credit scene, it's like, that's Mahershala Ali's voice. I'm like, he said one word. He's like, hey, whatever. And I was like, okay.
Yo.
Yeah. Hey, Dane. Yeah. Like, the end of Eternals is actually like a horror movie for me at the end. Like, when Arashim shows up and just grabs them, I was like, oh shit.
Yeah, a little wild. But that's even a major setup for like a sequel that we'll never see, probably, but I'm sure they'll try to shoehorn those characters in elsewhere. I liked Eternals is one of my favorite Marvel movies, quite honestly. And I would love to see a little bit more with those characters and allowing the actors to kind of live in them a little bit more.
It had so many things that should have worked, but for whatever reason, it just didn't connect with the man. Like, I don't know how you have Angelina Jolie, Richard Madden, Kit Harington, Gemma Chan, like all these people. And it's just like, nah, we're kind of bored at that point. Like, even Makari and Fastos, you know, Brian Tyree Henry is great.
Yeah. I mean, who else? Brian Tyree Henry, Barry Keoghan. Yeah. Like, there was a shit ton of people in this movie that were great.
I can't pronounce Barry's last name, so I just call him Druig, and Druig sucks. And that's Kamal. I forget what his actual name is in real life.
Kamal Nanjiani.
Yeah, I can't pronounce his name either.
That's three names you've said that you couldn't pronounce today so far, and we're only 20 minutes in, so things are going well. Barry Keoghan, I said Barry Keoghan in a video after Saltburn on TikTok, and I got like blasted for it, so I'll never make that mistake again.
He was in Masters of the Air for like three episodes, and he did the worst version of a New York accent I've ever heard in my entire life. I was like, what was that?
So we got other Marvel news this week at CinemaCon, and basically there was a clip shown of the upcoming Captain America film, Brave New World, where Sam Wilson's taking on the character of Captain America, and he is in an interaction with Harrison Ford's Thaddeus Ross, probably the Red Hulk, and he's tasked with assembling a new Avengers team. On a scale of 1 to 5, what's your excitement for this movie?
I mean, look, I'm a huge fan of Harrison Ford. Like, he's the reason, like, why I think him and Michael Keaton are the reason I grew up and started to love movies from Indiana Jones, Han Solo, to Batman. But, like, the fact that they got him to do this to replace someone like William Hurt, who was great as Ross, who'd been playing it for so many years, is fun for me. Obviously, Harrison's not going to have a mustache. He already, like, that's already referenced in the stuff we've heard come out of CinemaCon, where he's like, you know, I heard you, I forget what he said, but it's basically like, you look different. He's like, well, they told me to shave it, or, you know, I wouldn't be president, or something like that. But I'm a huge fan of Falcon and the Winter Soldier, but, like, that's mostly for Bucky. That's just, like, I'm a Winter Soldier fan, and I know he's not going to be in this. So, like, I don't know how to feel about Sam Wilson's Captain America in his own movie. I don't know what it's going to be like. Like, I still have to see what they're going to do with it, but, like, I'm very excited for Harrison Ford as the Red Hulk, which we know we're going to see. And I think Tim Blake Nelson's going to be the leader as well. We haven't seen him in almost 20 years since The Incredible Hulk back in 2008.
And apparently, what's her name is back for like three minutes or something.
Liv Tyler. Or,
yeah.
Yeah. Betty.
Betty, who I just about called Betsy Ross. So things are going really well here.
And, you know, we were talking about WrestleMania earlier. I know Seth Rollins has a small role in this movie. And Rose Salazar, who has the greatest eyes in the history of eyes, is going to be in this movie as well.
Wasn't Seth Rollins rumored to be part of what's the group within the movie?
It's some kind of like Legion of something or other. I can't remember. It's like the leader. I can't think of it right now.
I had read somewhere that people believe that got cut from the film, but
there's been so many reshoots and rewrites and stuff they want to add in and they're taken out. It's been very confusing story wise coming out of this because it keeps getting pushed back and delayed here and there.
Absolutely. It looks like, yeah, well, that I just Googled it to look what's going on. And the last article I see is, did Marvel delete Seth Rollins' role? So we'll see what happens with that.
One thing I am excited to see, like if you watched Falcon and the Winter Soldier, they do talk about Isaiah Bradley, who was like a super soldier after Captain America. Like I know Carl Lumpy is going to be in this movie as Isaiah Bradley, and that's something I want to see. I want to see flashbacks to him just taking on the Winter Soldier in like the 60s and the 70s and stuff like that.
I'm hoping that this is one of those that is like the dark horse that people aren't really betting high on, and it ends up being one of the better Marvel movies to really kind of reignite the passion.
I mean, that's what Guardians of the Galaxy was. Nobody had any idea what that was, and then it came out and blew people's mind.
Very true, except for the second one, which I did not care for. We also got a little bit of a tease of Thunderbolts, and the biggest thing is that the title is confirmed to have an asterisk at the end. Now, I did a lot of super sleuthing on this, and my buddy last night was filling me in on some of it as well. What's your theory on that? Do you have one?
I think it's probably... I mean, my theory is it's kind of like a wink to the Suicide Squad. Like, the Thunderbolts is going to have many iterations of it at that point. Like, is this the actual, like, version we're going to get for future movies? Or is it just like, this is what we get for right now, and we'll see who comes back and how it goes. But it could also be like a just like a wink to the audience at that point. Like, maybe this is happening somewhere else. I'm not sure how to think of it at that point.
The popular theory going around is that this will be linked to the Dark Avengers, because in the comics, a lot of the Dark Avengers are formed by a number of the Thunderbolts included. And someone even put, they retweeted the announcement of the title and said, so, quote, so what now? We are Thunderbolts no more? Are we like some kind of Dark Avengers then? Scene. which I think that makes a little bit of sense that they could go that route.
I don't know. I'm confused about what they're going to, especially with like Wyatt Russell's John Walker's character. Mm-hmm. Like, is anyone even going to remember him from Falcon and the Winter Soldier? Like, I mean, obviously we will, but it's just like they're adding like the least popular of like, you know, bad guys that I kind of like, again, I'm a huge Sebastian Stan Winter Soldier fan, so I'm going to see everything he's ever in, but like, I just don't know how well it's going to do with the story they're going to tell. Like, is it going to be a separate story? Is it going to connect to anything in the future? I just don't know. I feel like it'd be better doing a standalone version of it, just like their own missions.
I'm ready for Julia Louis-Dreyfus to finally take flight in this as Countess Valentina Allegra de Fontaine, because I love her. And I've just been waiting for that character to really take off.
Well, like the whole thing with her was like Black Widow was supposed to come out and then COVID happened. Mm-hmm. So they just threw her into Falcon and the Winter Soldier at the end because we saw that first. I was like, oh, she's back in this again. What is she doing? Just sitting there, kind of. And same thing with Black Panther, just sitting there.
That reveal, though, when they're showing her walking in Falcon and Winter Soldier, and then they reveal it was her, I think I like audibly screamed because I didn't know it was coming. I was so pumped. I was like, yes, Veep.
I want to see David Harbour back as Red Guardian. He's so funny in that role. He does such a good Russian accent with it, too.
He had so much fun.
Oh, he had a blast.
Yeah. That was, again, an underrated movie. I didn't love it, but it was fine. It was a good time.
I liked it just for Florence Pugh. I thought she stole the entire... Like, Marvel and, like, some of these movies are so known for having their main characters get the movie stolen from them by supporting characters. Like, Captain America Civil War was stolen by Chadwick Boseman's Black Panther. That's all I wanted to see. Black Widow was stolen by Florence Pugh. That's all I wanted to see. Her and David Harbour.
I hear you. I'm with you there. The final thing that we got, there was a couple teases about Deadpool versus Wolverine, or Deadpool and Wolverine, sorry. Deadpool versus Wolverine. See what Godzilla versus Kong has done to me. There were a couple teases. We got this like funny intro where Deadpool talks about getting hard at Wolverine breaking the fourth wall, which was pretty funny. They showed apparently a really wild, I think, 9 minutes of the film, which is cool. People loved it. And they also are playing into the whole bucket thing, the popcorn bucket thing, and said that Deadpool himself is going to design it. So what do you think this is going to be? Because it's going to be raunchy and weird.
I mean, I didn't think anything could get worse than the Dune bucket looking thing, but this might just have like Deadpool's mouth like this with like a Wolverine claw going through it or coming up the other end, or it could be him dressed as a pirate. I have no idea, but I'm expecting Ryan to do something hilarious that's going to blow my mind at that point.
You mean that crazy Dune bucket that sold out everywhere?
Yeah. When I asked them, I was like, so if I buy the bucket, do I get the popcorn with it? They're like, yeah. I was like, I'm just curious. I didn't know how it worked. It was usually like people were just buying the bucket and didn't want the popcorn. I don't know. I didn't buy it. I would, but it was too expensive.
I was waiting for it to come down, thinking they would sell it for like a discount, but they're gone apparently.
Yeah.
Are they on eBay right now?
They're probably on eBay for like $200 or something like that.
Let's see. Dune bucket.
What are the other buckets? They moved on to like Ghostbusters buckets that I saw there last week and something else.
The lowest price I see right now with 6 days left on bidding is $77.
Yeah, it'll probably hit like $150 when everyone's done bidding on it or something crazy.
This is wild that this is actually a thing. They're all around $100.
Once you get them on the secondary market, it's like, you know, there's no rules. It's Thunderdome out there. They'll sell them for whatever.
Thunderdome out there.
There's no rules.
eBay Thunderdome. Yeah. All right, let's continue on with CinemaCon news here. We got a couple cool, I think, cool things. The first one is The Last Ronin, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, really popular comic, is going to be turned into a rated R live action with Walter Hamada producing. What are your thoughts on this?
I'm sure Ray Fisher will have an endless amount of things to say just because Walter Hamada is producing. And that's the only time Ray Fisher climbs out of his holes to talk about that man in general. But I had no idea what The Last Ronin was until about a year ago when I saw a NECA action figure of like The Last Ronin. I was like, I got to look into the story. And then I was reading about it more. I'm like, this is phenomenal. We need to get this on the big screen. And I totally bought the action figure. Like, it has so many accessories. That's why I bought it. But like all these new lines, the new line of The Last Ronin, like everyone, every character is getting their own, you know, action figure at that point. But it seems dark. I really want them to go back to like the 90s turtle suits, like the Jim Henson suits, and it just because that would be horrifying at the same time. But like, I don't want to see like so much CGI animation, but I don't know how you do it any other way with practical effects. But I'm really waiting to see Michelangelo murder all these people.
So let's give the synopsis here real quick. And I'm reading this straight from the publisher's website. Who is the Last Ronin? In a future battle ravaged New York City, a lone surviving turtle embarks on a seemingly hopeless mission seeking justice for the family he lost. That's pretty wild. Post-apocalyptic nightmare.
Everybody's brutally murdered, basically, in The Last Ronin. It's more like kind of like Shoguns on TV now. Like there's a lot of like seppuku talk and like ritual suicides and, you know, ninjas and stuff like that. But it's very dark. And then like you get like a more graphic novel version of Shredder and the Foot Clan and everything like that. It's kind of like, I'd say it's more like Watchmen than it is like anything else.
It's kind of crazy they're going live action with this. And again, I hope, like you said, I hope they go suits and practical, because there's a lot of opportunity here.
Like I grew up with the Turtles. I love the ones that Stephen Amell was in and stuff like that. They were stupid, but they were enjoyable at the same time. Like even Alan Ritchson played one of the Turtles. I think he played Raphael in some of them. But like it just didn't look right with them being so animated CGI. Like everybody else was real, but they were kind of just like thrown in the background. So I really hope they figure out a way to do something practical with the franchise.
It looks like I haven't read the book and I kind of want to, and they have them at Target right now.
Yeah, everything's at Target. That's where I found The Last Ronin action figure. I was like, what is this? I need to see this. I had no idea what it was until I saw it. I'm like, this guy's got all these swords. I was like, is it Leo? Is it Donnie? I'm like, oh, it's Mikey. He's the only one left. I figure it would be Raphael out of any of them. But
have you read this? Or
yes.
Like, do you know, and it's worth it?
Oh, it's fantastic.
Oh, I really need to check it out. Definitely need to check that out.
I think it's like five issues put together. Like it's only been out for I think 2 years or something along those lines. It's a relatively new. Like I said, I had never heard of it until the last few years.
Paramount was really cooking at CinemaCon this year. They also announced the Blair Witch reboot, which I have mixed thoughts on.
I mean, I think I don't think you could ever recapture what they did the first time around. Like, that was like when it first came out in like 99 or 98, we were like, is this real? Like, do these people actually die at the hands of this witch? And then they did like the second one, The Book of Secrets, which is one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my entire life. It was just about like sexual witch orgies at one point, which I have no idea what they're going to do with this. I just don't know how you recapture the spirit of what the Blair Witch was in 1999.
It's funny because I remember being terrified of it. And it was like, I remember we were going to Ocean City, Maryland on a big family trip. And I was thinking that it was real or something, and that like, this was actually happening. And I remember my nephew and I were staying up in this like room all the way at the top of whatever we were renting. And there was like a spot on the wall. And I was convinced that it was like a portal to another like dimension or something. Like, that's how dumb I was as a child. You're exactly right. I think the movie itself is one thing, but the energy around it, the what's going on here, the curiosity, that's what really made this sing. And I think that's when we saw the sequel/reboot years ago, it was not really that well received because you can't recapture that.
And like, it wasn't like found footage or anything like that. Like, it was actual actors being filmed, and it didn't feel like this was the first like found film that I can remember ever knowing about before like Quarantine and Paranormal Activity and stuff like that. This was like, this set the standard for it. And like that scene at the end where they come down into the house, he's just looking at the wall. You're like, well, these people are all going to die now. And then they actually revealed the filmmakers weren't dead. We were like, oh, thank God, they're still alive. I think they came out like the MTV Movie Awards. Everyone's like, okay, all right, they're not dead. Got it.
It's a very immersive experience.
one of the directors, I think Eduardo Sanchez is like the co-director. He did this movie like 10 years ago called Exist. It's like a Bigfoot movie where they like found footage in there. Nobody's ever seen it, but it's great. So if you've ever gotten the chance to see Exist, it's a really cool Bigfoot found footage horror movie.
Really?
Yeah. I think it came out like 2014.
Okay. Huh. It's called Exist?
Exists. Yeah, I think it's 2014 something.
Oh yeah. 2014.
Huh. Nobody's seen it. It made like $8.
I saw friends who venture into the remote Texas woods for a party weekend find themselves stalked by Bigfoot.
It's like a Cabin Fever Bigfoot movie. That's the way I call it.
Kind of into that. I'm going to see if it's on streaming somewhere. Oh, it's on Tubi for free.
We're good. I was going to say it should be. It only made like $7 at the box
office. $7 at the box office. Has a 36% on Rotten Tomatoes. So that's great. Okay, I'll definitely check that out. The last thing that was shared at CinemaCon that we're going to discuss at least was that tease at the end of Transformers Rise of the Beast, where G.I. Joe was revealed to be involved, is going to be delivered on in a Transformers and G.I. Joe crossover, executive produced by Steven Spielberg. I have to tell you, this is all stupid. I'm all here for it because I actually had fun with Rise of the Beast. I thought it was just a good grounded film and wasn't too crazy. It was Transformers, but it was actually like, I don't know, a reinvented Transformers that wasn't just like crazy CGI all the time. Actually had an interesting story. And I liked this reveal at the end because I had no idea that was happening.
The fact that they took this long to put these two IPs together, like Hasbro owns them both. And like, it was so, like I'm a kid of the 80s, so G.I. Joe's and Transformers is what I know. And Rise of the Beast, when it came to Beast Wars, was the first Transformers I actually got to see on TV that I remember seeing. Because like all the other Transformers ones were just reruns and movies from the 80s at that point. But like, you know, Yo Joe, I still have that song in my head. The 1986 movie is the great. I really hope they use that theme song. I know they won't, but it's gonna be fantastic. It doesn't even, like, I'm a huge fan of G.I. Joe, Retaliation, and Rise of Cobra. Like, they're stupid, fun, awesome movies, even if Channing Tatum hated being in both of them. Well, the second one for like 9 seconds, but
you're right. And I think a lot of people don't realize that this was an actual, like, if you're not familiar with the comics, then people are looking at this saying that doesn't make sense. Why are you putting them together? Hasbro, or, you know, Paramount's just taking advantage of Hasbro here and having the properties and whatever. There is a comic run that people are very big on with Transformers and G.I. Joe. So there's a lot of opportunity here. And it seems like Anthony Ramos is going to play a big role in moving forward.
I really hope Mirage comes back. I'm not a big Pete Davidson guy, but I was a huge fan of him in that role as Mirage. And I really hope we get his car back.
He did a great job with that. Absolutely great job with that. I'm looking forward to it. it's interesting because Transformers, I think, has been kind of dying for a while. And to your point about Beast Wars, I think this was a really cool way to kind of reinvent it a little bit, even though Rise of the Beast didn't. Yes, it had the characters in there, but there's a lot missing from the, you know, traditional Beast Wars cartoons that I would watch every morning before school.
Yeah, exactly. I want to see more Rat Trap just so I could do
Rat Trap.
Rat Trap Maximize. That was my favorite.
Yeah, I remember my dad and I used to watch that every morning before I went to school.
He was like a very nervous New York Jewish Maximal, and it was hilarious.
Oh my God, I love it. All right, Jimmy, we play a game here called Smash Cuts. Ready?
Smash Cuts. Yes.
The creepy
Smash Cuts.
What we're going to do is I'm going to give you some topics and you're going to tell me smash or pass and just a little bit about why. And the first one is for those of those who may be listening who don't know you, you are a WWE guy. You may or may not have worked for the company in the past. WrestleMania was last weekend. So WrestleMania 40, smash or pass?
Oh, we smash it hard. My household roots super hard for Cody and everything he does. True story, don't tell anybody this, but I did dress up as Goldust in sixth grade for Halloween.
No way. So, yeah,
100%. There's no pictures, but it actually happened.
Well, oh, damn. I was going to say, we need to promote this podcast somehow.
the Shattered Dreams is coming. No, it's not.
Shattered Dreams is coming. Oh, my God. Yeah, I had a really good time with it. Would you say the first night was the better one or the second night?
I was a bigger fan of the second night just because, you know, you got to see Seth come out in his Shield gear. And, like, the main event was awesome. And you got The Undertaker and you got The Rock and you've got all these people coming back for it. It was supposed to be Stone Cold in The Undertaker's place, but they couldn't end up making it work monetarily, which would have been great. Would have been a homage to, I think, WrestleMania 14, which was here, 1999, The Rock and Austin, mm-hmm. that face off, their first ever title match on pay-per-view. Which
was awesome. I was there. Do you think that all fell apart that day, because the fact that Triple H tweeted at 3:16 that day was kind of like, it seemed like a Taylor Swift marketing ploy.
I think it was probably just to get people to watch because everybody had so many 3:16 like things that they were seeing. It was like a QAnon 3:16 at that point. You're like, well, this guy beat him on this day, which was 3:16. Austin's coming back.
That's the thing about WWE though. People theorize so much about like what's going to happen. And then by the end of it, you're just pumped either way. Like I was watching it with my dad. I think I shared this with you. And he kept going, listen for the glass. And then as soon as you hear like the bell, he just goes,
I watched that whole thing even when they were rolling to the credits, just because they were in the ring for so long. I was like, come on, Steve, where are you? Come out there.
Come on, Steve. Oh my God. Scary Movie is getting a reboot. Scary Movie, the hilarious comedic take or comedic roasting, I should say, of all horror movies that have come. A24 is shaking in its boots right now. But what are your thoughts on a Scary Movie reboot, smash or pass?
Smash or pass if it's Scary Movie 1 or 2. If it's Scary Movie 3 or 4, pass. Because I didn't care for 3 or 4 at all. But 1 and 2 are some of my favorite funny movies of all time. There's so many great moments from so many horrendous people. And like James Woods in the second one is a horrible human being. But he has some of the funniest scenes ever as the priest with Natasha Lyonne as the exorcist girl.
I've been watching clips of the old ones. And some of the best one, I think, is when it's Anna Faris and who is it? It's Regina Hall.
Yeah. No. Regina Hall. Yeah.
When they're downstairs in the basement and the skeleton is chasing Anna Faris and Regina Hall's like fall. Like, they're like get her. Like, oh my God, it was so damn funny. All you needed to do was die, bitch.
I snuck into the first Scary Movie. It came out in 2000. I think I was only like 14, but obviously you couldn't get into. I mean, you still can't, but you can. Like, so like I came with a bunch of friends. We all had to sit in different places. They ended up getting thrown out. Me and my friend John ended up making it through the whole movie, and it was a fantastic experience.
That's pretty funny. Monopoly is being turned into a movie, executive produced by Margot Robbie. Smash or pass?
I mean, I guess smash. I mean, I don't know how to feel about a Monopoly movie. Like, I also didn't know how to feel about a Barbie movie before it came out. And now anytime it's on HBO, I have to watch it and sing I'm Just Ken because it was that good. But, like, if we did just get, like, a Risk movie, I would smash the shit out of that. I just want Risk, the game of global domination in movie form. But not Napoleon, like a different one.
I just want Life, but it would be a very depressing movie. A very, very depressing movie. AMC Cherry Hill, smash or pass?
Pass, and I hope it gets shot into out of our existence. If the earthquake that we had 2 weeks ago could have swallowed anything in New Jersey, I hope it would be that theater so we never have to go there again.
Anyone checked in on it?
No, it might. It's probably. Well, I guess we'll know if I go to Abigail this week if it's still there.
The music gets a little too loud, and you are afraid that the walls are going to crumble.
They have good theaters there. They just never put us in them. They always put us in the shitty theater. Except for that time we saw the Marvels. That was the only time we were in the good theater for them.
Wasn't that IMAX?
Yeah, that's the only theater that's any. Everything else is just like, I sat in that theater for the last Voyage of Demeter. The whole theater was empty, and this dude sat right next to me. He's like, "Do you want me to move?" I was like, "Well, yeah. Why are you over here? The whole theater is empty."
Oh my god. Last one here that I want to ask you about is there's been a lot of rumors around the Star Trek movies. And right now we got confirmation that there's a Star Trek movie in development, but there's been two Star Trek movies rumored for the longest time. Are you smash or pass the cast of the most recent three coming back for a fourth?
I'd smash the cast. Yeah. But I don't know how well the movie's going to look or work. And like, Anton Yechlin not being there, I think that'll mm-hmm. be weighing on people's minds, because, you know, Mr. Chekhov is a huge part of the Star Trek universe at that point. Like, I don't know how you replace him or say he's off camera doing something. Leonard Nimoy is not around anymore. Like, Mr. Spock has passed away. Like, it's just been so long since we got the last movie. I don't know what we're going to see from the cast that would return at that point.
Yeah, I'm with you. It sounds like Toby Haynes from Black Mirror is going to be the one taking on this film.
If we could get like a USS Kelvin version, like the Black Mirror version of Star Trek, I think that would be super interesting. Or not the Callister episode, the one with Jesse Plemons where they did like the VR Star Trek one.
The studio confirmed, this is from Slash Film, the studio confirmed that Haynes' film will usher in the franchise's long-awaited return to theaters while apparently also functioning as a prequel to the previous Kelvin universe movies. Oh, well, that explains that.
Yeah, I mean, look, the first Star Trek from 2009 is great. Into Darkness and Star Trek Beyond. I liked Into Darkness, and Beyond was better than I thought it was going to be, but I don't think they ever recaptured what they got in the first one.
Yeah, I can't disagree with you there. Awesome. What are you looking forward to coming up movie-wise?
Oh, this summer is going to be insane. I mean, mm-hmm. it's definitely Deadpool, mm-hmm. Wolverine. That's what I think most of us are looking for. I mean, we're only getting, I think, that's the only Marvel movie for this year. So, I mean, that'll set the standard for me. That's all my mind is on at this point. Until we get Dune Messiah, that's all I'm thinking about.
That's all I'm thinking about. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to Deadpool as well. I'm also looking forward to Abigail. Not where it's at, but excited to see it. So
I love Dan. I love Dan Stevens, and he's insane and everything, as we just saw in Godzilla X Kong. So anything he's in, I'm automatically watching. And like, we're gonna get to see Melissa Barea and what's the one girl's name that was in Lisa Frankenstein? I can't remember what. Catherine Newton, I think it is.
Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah.
There are also speaking of Melissa Barea, there's a lot of chatter online right now that there's some big Scream news about the drop that's gonna Scream news about to drop that's going to divide people. And I'm wondering if they made a deal to get her back in.
Somebody was saying the other day, like after they announced the Scary Movie like sequels, it's like they should just cast Melissa Barea and everyone that got fired from the other Scream movies to come in. I was like, that would be fantastic. I don't know if that's going to happen, but I don't know what they plan to do. Like, Scream's just been a mess since. Well, let's not talk about why it's been a mess, but it's been a mess.
We talked about that on a previous podcast. We're not diving back into that.
Yeah, let's not delve into that.
Jimmy, where can people find you?
Oh, you can find me. I have three different TikTok accounts. You can find Movie Death Blows, Movie Death Blow, Movie Death Blows with two S's because I've been banned so many times. But those are the big accounts that I'm on. You can find me on Twitter at Movie Death Blows. Facebook, we just crossed the 10,000 follower mark on there. It's Movie Deaths. So I'm everywhere. Anytime you see Movie and Death Blows, you're getting me at that point.
Why do you get banned so much?
Well, before it was Warner Brothers, and I don't get along with them at all in the least bit. And then, like, they were just flagging everything that I did. And then my account had like 48,000 followers that got banned. I finally got it back. Then they limited my reach. And like, so like that account gets like 200 views on everything. The new account that I started blew up over last summer and kind of like got back to where I was there. And I've been banned once, and that was by Disney. And then I talked to them, and obviously I'm back on it now. Disney likes me. I like them. Warner Brothers, if something terrible would happen to them, you know, maybe somebody else can buy them at that point. I don't know.
That is the opinion of Movie Death Blows and not of Guy at the Movies or the larger Smash Cuts family. always have to figure out who you're waging war with this week. You know,
it's usually just Warner Brothers. No studio's ever treated me the way they have. Never dealt with that before.
Unbelievable. Yeah, just wild. Absolutely. I'm glad that I haven't had that happen yet.
shout out to my friends at Focus Features. I do have some news, but like, I don't like, so the Bike Riders, they acquired the Bike Riders Focus mm-hmm. Features, and they're doing Robert Eggers' Nosferatu. I have talked to them over there, so maybe I'll get invited out to the world premiere they don't know where they're doing it at, but I've made contact to get invited.
That'd be awesome. Very, very cool. All right, sir. Thank you for hopping on. Always great chatting. I'll see you this week at screenings. If you like this episode, please make sure that you go and like and subscribe wherever you're listening or watching, whether that's on a podcast platform or on YouTube. Follow Smash Cuts Podcast on Instagram and Smash Cuts Pod on X, formerly known as Twitter. And we'll see you next week when Sean Math Teacher Movies returns. Later.